Thanks for joining us for the morning show today on WRCO, and we're talking about the Richland School District today. It's our monthly visit with Superintendent Steve Board. He's brought along a friend today, Chris Shannon, president of the School District Foundation. So good to have you guys along.
Steve, good morning.
Good to see you.
Good to see you. Yeah, it's awesome.
The months go by pretty fast. You know, we're talking, it seemed like just the other day, it was July, and we were talking about the beginning of the school year.
Yeah, so. The days are long, but the months are short.
Yes.
It just flies by. It's been a great school year, but it's hard to believe we're into the fourth quarter now. You know, we've got, 37 days of school left. I keep reminding our staff, though, we still get 37 more days with our students, and there's still a lot of opportunities for learning and connection and relations and all the positive interactions that they can have. And so don't just kind of coast to the end of the year. Like, let's finish this thing strong. But it's really been a great school year. We've had great community support, great parental support, great students, and truly wonderful staff.
It's a time of year when you start talking about solo and ensemble competition. I think State Forensics is coming up, I think this weekend, maybe.
Yeah, I believe that's right. Yeah, there are so many things going on. It's hard for me to even keep track of it all, right? I mean, every day there seems like there's something positive, something that our students are involved in, something big, like all of those things, right, that I can't even do justice in giving them all the credit that they need. But all of those activities are just so vital to a student's development, you know, not just in the Richland School District, any school district, the not just coming to school and learning, but the interactions, the social interactions that they're getting, the extracurricular opportunities. I mean, those are the things as a collective unit, that's what molds an individual and prepares them for life outside of high school, whether they go into college or tech school or enter the workforce immediately or join the one of the you know, Navy or Army or whatever it might be, armed forces. And it's all of those things that are mixed together. And we've just got a lot of great opportunities, a lot of great things going on. And our marketing communications director, Carrie Stoltz, she does a great job of promoting them all, but I don't know how she can keep it all straight. Like, there's just so many things going on and so many great things. Every day somebody's saying, you know, this is going on. I'm like, that's awesome. And so this is going on. That's awesome. You know, I just can't keep enough of it. So it's great.
Good stuff. Can you give us an update on the concession stand at the sports complex?
Yeah, as the public knows, you know, we had a fire at the concession stand here later this winter. Started in the wee hours of the morning. We were fortunate. It was a Saturday, and we actually had one of those great events going on. We had a wrestling tournament going on, so our custodial crew were there bright and early, way earlier than they would have been on a normal Saturday, if at all. And that fire started and took off in that concession stand. And so we've had our adjusters out there. We've had the auditors, insurance people, wonderful people have been working together. They've identified what they're deeming to be the official cause of the concession stand. They can never say with 100% certainty that this is exactly what happened, because we don't necessarily have video footage of it starting, and nobody was obviously there. But there's a heater, a ceiling-mounted heater in one of the storerooms that we have at the concession stand for us to keep things during the winter months, right? Our snowblowers, things like that, that need to not get into a freezing environment. So there's a heater in there, and the blower fan went bad, and so it stopped blowing air out. But the heater was still conducting heat. But because that fan wasn't getting that heat off of the surface of the heater, one of the mounting nails is affixed to a ceiling joist made of wood, and there was enough heat that conducted through that nail into the wood in the rafters above, and the conditions were just right, a very dry environment, a little bit of a breeze going on, and just a little bit of a spark, and then that thing took off and went. And so on the back of the heater, Brian Jones had it at one of our board meetings for folks to see. There's a big scorched mark where you can see that was likely the cause and the origin of the fire, and it just baffles me. You know, I mean, we have these kinds of things all over in residence and in commercial industry, and for that fan to go bad and the conditions to be just right to strike that spark and start that fire. So we kind of know what caused it. Certainly was no foul play. There was nobody at fault that did anything. It was just a victim of circumstance, but We've got the place shut down right now. We've got our architects working on getting things developed. We've had to buy some spring sports equipment. We had some track equipment in there, some starting blocks, things like that. We've worked on getting that secured so that we have that for our spring sports. And the rest of it, we're really going to try to, you know, just buckle down and get our construction crews and the architects to work on that throughout the spring and into the summer with the hopes of being ready to go early fall for fall sports and have that ready to go for our football and soccer games. Definitely will not be ready this spring. We're going to kind of be piecemealing it together. Jody Pretch, our food service director, Laura Selgeby, our activities director. They are very creative individuals, and they are trying to figure out ways to be able to have some concessions, be able to have the things that we would normally offer from the concession stand in a different type of setting. So kudos to them for making it work, and everybody's been wonderful, but just a goofy thing that occurred, and we're moving forward to try to get it fixed, and we should be good to go for the fall, if all things go well.
Great. Well, that's encouraging news, that's for sure.
It's unbelievable
that a nail would get that hot.
Isn't that the truth? That's exactly what I thought, until you look at the back of that heater and you see this big scorch mark around this nail.
Yeah.
It's just like unbelievable. So it truly is.
Let's talk a little bit about, some referendum items. I know that you've been working on that and kind of using that money to good sources and things like that.
Yeah, so we passed the $27 million, 27.16 to be exact, last April. I know that there were several referendums on the ballot this spring. Richland School District was not one of them. We passed ours last April. We sold our bonds in two sets. We sold $15 million of it last July. And then just last week, we actually sold the last 12.16. So that'll be going to the board. Interest rates were favorable. Our financial advisors were able to get better than projected interest rates on all of our bonds. And so that will be an interest savings, which will then be a taxpayer savings down the road as we have to make payments. We've completed the bidding for all of the primary school last November. We are now gearing up for full construction mode, and so the public will start to see a lot of things happening. Even as school winds down here at the primary school, you'll start to see storage bin units being transported on property. Job trailer will be delivered here in the near future. A lot of equipment and a lot of the things that they're going to be using will start to be delivered. We're going to obviously be very conscious of where our students are at and make sure that everything's safe and secure, but they're getting everything ready because on June 9th, right, students are done on what, the 4th or 5th, and teachers are done on that next day, that Thursday, that next Monday, June 9th, construction 100% is going on, and they're ready to hit the ground running, and a lot of work being done, a lot of things being coordinated. This is my first real big construction project. I was involved in the softball concession stand, several years ago, but you know, that was a $350,000 project. And I don't mean to sound like that wasn't a lot of money, because at the time it is, and it still is, you know, but for a construction project, that was a lot for me to take on. This is a $27 million project that we're trying to take on. But Nexus has been wonderful to work with through this entire project. Our bids for the primary school came in a little bit higher than what we thought, but we also knew that the scope of project was increased a little bit as well. Those sinking classrooms that we had originally, we thought two of them were at issue. It turned out to be four of them that we had to shore up. But while we were expecting a $1.2 million overage for the primary school, and that's one of the reasons why we started there, so we could make adjustments accordingly if we needed to, the bids actually only came in at $400,000 over. And so that was actually a pleasant surprise. I know it was still over for the primary school budget, but we had saved well over that amount in the high school roofing project the summer before. So long story short, construction is going to be happening fast and furious at the primary school to be able to get kids back into our school building at the start of school, with the exception of those four kindergarten classrooms. Those will not be ready by the start of school, or highly unlikely. And so Mrs. Hardy and her wonderful team down there are working on plans to try to make the rooms that they've got work, minus four, for the first month, 2 months, maybe 3 months of the school year, and then be ready to move into those kindergarten rooms when they're ready. Our next big date will be April 23rd. April 23rd, the bids for the intermediate school, which is what we're calling phase two of the project. Most of that construction will happen next summer, summer of 26, maybe a little bit this summer. But those bids will come in on the 23rd of April, and that will be a really good measuring stick for us to know, again, are we continuing to stay at or under budget, or have some of the things that are affecting us globally with, you know, tariffs and just things like that, are those going to have an impact on construction costs, and are things going to come in a little higher? So April 23rd will be our next real big date, and that'll go to our Buildings and Property Committee, where the bids will be revealed by Nexus and then ultimately to our board. But fingers crossed, we're optimistic that we've got a good plan in place and that those numbers will come in favorable, or at least right at what we projected, and we'll be able to continue to do everything and hopefully more than what we had hoped for. So, and then the final phase will be the high school. We've been working diligently with our internal groups, with the auditorium upgrades, as well as involved quite a few of the outside groups. So we've had some wonderful outside groups. Our auditorium gets used a lot by outside organizations, whether it be the Community Players Theater or Dance Studio or others, right? And so we wanted to involve the experts in the auditorium world to make sure that we were getting something that worked for community as well. And so we think we've got a good plan with that. Our tech ed team went to visit a couple of schools to find out how we could increase our tech ed offerings and what we're doing up there between ag and welding and construction and small motors and things like that. We're excited about that plan. Those bids will probably go out yet later this spring or very early summer. We're thinking right around mid-May, maybe early June. Those bids should come back then, you know, 30, 45 days after that. And by the middle of the summer, we should have a really, really good plan for what our finances are going to look like regarding the referendum. But all things are pointing very positive right now. So it's been a very exciting.
The work on the four sinking classrooms you talked about as well. So they'll still be doing a little bit of work as the school year progresses then.
Yeah, because that's going to require a lot of foundational work. They're going to have to jack up the ceilings and actually physically bring down the walls and redo the footings underneath and then build it all back up and tie it all together again. That's going to be a pretty extensive project. As they did core samples of the dirt, you know, some of the packing and compaction of the dirt wasn't necessarily done the way they would do it now when they built that building back then, which was one of the reasons why it has sunk. And so they're going to have to make sure that building from the ground up, literally the ground up, that the ground is in place, then the footings are in place and everything is done appropriately. And that's just going to take a little bit of time. So we're fully anticipating not having those four classrooms available for the start of the school year, likely probably pushing somewhere between Thanksgiving and Christmas of next year. But we've got a plan to make it work in the meantime.
Sounds good. Yeah. The Richland School District Foundation, you know, means a lot to you and the district, doesn't it?
Absolutely. You know, we, the school district, we really have two really, really good partnerships that we've got. We've got the Richland Center High School Athletic Booster Club, which is just a partnership that really focuses on the athletic side, and then the Richland School District Foundation on the other end. And that's not to mean that we don't have other really, really good relationships with our PTOs and PATTs and those kind of folks as well. But these are two really vital organizations that support and enhance the offerings that we have in our school district that the school district itself maybe can't fund to that capacity. So the foundation itself, big day coming up for our students, our seniors. We have our scholarship night on May 28th, and our foundation plays such a key role in that night. And good friend Chris Shannon, our president of our foundation, is here as well, and he can talk a little bit about the foundation. But that partnership is so vital, and so we're just so appreciative as a school district of the support that we get from the volunteers that are on these committees and on these boards to be able to support our students without really a lot of benefit other than the pure joy of helping our students in our school district.
Chris, we welcome you to the show today. Good morning.
Morning, Phil.
Yeah. So how long have you been a part of the foundation?
I've been a part of the foundation since 2011.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, so.
And how long have you been president?
There was a phase where I was interim president and then full president. I want to say since maybe 2019, right around there.
And so. Why do you do it?
You know, I grew up in Richland Center, went to the high school, graduated. I've got kids in the school district. My wife teaches in the school district. It just seemed like one of our board members, Greg Gokenauer, was acting president at the time, and he kind of offered this opportunity to give back to the community, and I took it in 2011, and it's just kind of grown from there.
What are some examples of some things, some pet projects that you've had?
So there's a few things that we like to do as the board. I'll kind of go through our calendar year. Steve mentioned it right away. The first big thing that we do is the scholarship night. We work really close with the high school guidance department. They're kind of in charge of the scholarships there. And then we handle a lot of the pass-through money, the scholarship fund. Some of it we invest ourselves. And we provide the MC for the scholarship night. We provide presenters for the scholarships that, you know, maybe the family doesn't have a presenter or the business doesn't have a presenter. We're there. We work close with the guidance department as far as organizing the event. And we usually have a little reception afterwards then too. So that's kind of the first big thing. And that's coming up, as Steve said, May 28th.
Hard to believe.
Yeah. Second thing that we do, it kind of ties in maybe, you know, with homecoming week. Right now we are actively getting nominations in for our outstanding alumni. So that's something we've been doing. I believe the first one was 1997 that we had honored, and that was Carletta Heidi. And we usually take between 1 and 4 nominees a year. We review their applications and go through the selection process. Some of the things we look for is, you know, obviously a high school graduate from Richland Center. Maybe, you know, what type of things did they do after school? How involved were they with their community? Do they still have ties to the Richland School District? Have they, you know, given back in any way to the community or the school district? And those are kind of some of the things we look for there. And then those nominees are selected usually early summer around June. And then homecoming, which is October 3rd this year, we honor them. We have a parade entry. So they get to go through the homecoming parade, and then we have our presentation for them prior to the football game, and then at halftime of the football game, they're also honored again. So a couple times to be honored in front of the whole community, and then also, you know, family and friends at the reception or the presentation we have for them.
Now, how can people nominate someone if they're listening to the program? You know, because I always think about how this person should be or that person should be. So it's important to get them nominated, isn't
right,
it?
Right. So a couple ways we can do that. We do have nomination forms available, but also just, you know, simply like our, I was going to end with this, but I'll say our email address to reach the foundation board is simply all lowercase board, B-O-A-R-D, at Richland Foundation, Richland School District Foundation, thank you, yep. Steve, .org. So you can email that. That goes to all 9 of our board members. And also contacting us through the district office, just in care of the School District Foundation Board. So two ways to contact us there. We are we currently have one opening on our board. So if you're listening to this and you feel like you'd like to get involved too, we do have an opening on our foundation board. And we have a new position in the last, I would say, year and a half, where we've got kind of an IT officer. That happens to be the open position. But we're working to automate a few more of these things as far as, you know, donations, scholarship applications, nominees for outstanding alumni, some of those things, get it a little more user-friendly, because right now it's still pen and paper. So
how often does the board meet?
So we meet monthly. We meet the third Monday of the month, and we meet at the high school, the district office there, and meetings are usually approximately hour to hour and a half, 5:30 to 7 at the latest. We try and have a hard stop at 7 because, you know, just people have lives. It's all volunteer and stuff. But we usually have a good turnout. I mean, with the, I guess you'd say we got 8 people on the board right now. One of them is a representative from the Richland School Board. So that position changes over time then. Currently that's Scott Bailing, and then our current district administrator sits in on all our meetings, so Steve's there with me every third Monday.
What about donations? You talked about that, but you're always open for those, I'm sure.
Yes. So if you'd like to establish like a scholarship or a donation, if you're interested in establishing a scholarship through either from your family or memorial scholarship or through your business, we ask you to contact the school district guidance office first. They have forms that you can fill out. It's the typical information, you know, who it's from, who it's for, criteria, qualifications, amount, how long it's going to last. And then we've got a similar form as far as basically, is this going to be money that we handle all the time in a lump sum, or is this going to be money that comes in as like pass through prior to the scholarship night that we just handle briefly? So that's one way of doing the scholarships. And then donations, either the physical address or the email address, contact us, and we would work on that. For people who want to make, family donations, maybe after an alumni passes or something like that, you know, we work with estates too, and establishing like an endowments and things. So
is it too late now to have one on the 28th for that award ceremony?
So what would be difficult with that is the high school guidance department's already worked with the students as far as the application process goes. So anything that we would do right now would be established for the 25-26 school year.
Yeah. I'm always amazed at that night, the amount of money that goes out to young people, because that's really changed in my era. You know, it was just a few hundred dollars maybe, but mm-hmm. Boy, the amount of money now, it's just unbelievable, isn't it?
It really is. And, we've got, as Steve alluded to it before, we've got a very active community. They want to see the students succeed. They want to give back to the students, and we've got a great student body who, you know, takes this opportunity to help fund, you know, their education.
It's amazing where Richland Center students land, you know, and you talked about outstanding alumni, you kind of tie them together, but boy, you got people represented. And when we read those announcements in October, it's just amazing what some of these people accomplish, right?
Yeah, it is. It really is. And, you know, it's nice to see, especially I think at the football game, current students can see maybe where their high school foundation led some other people. And I think that's beneficial. Kind of ties the generations together then.
Yeah, indeed. We're talking about the Richland School District. Chris Shannon is our guest. Steve Board as well. We'll have more coming up on The Morning Show. On our morning show today, Steve Board, earlier Chris Shannon, our guest, president of the School District Foundation, but talking about year-end things and the awards night and scholarship night coming up at the end of the year, just a couple of months away.
Yeah, it's not that far away at all. Like I said earlier, I think 37 days of school left. So just to kind of piggyback off of what Chris was saying, you know, the foundation is a 501c3 nonprofit organization, so it is a pathway for folks to make donations and scholarships, and that's one of the reasons that they use this foundation either through pass-through money or to have the foundation house the money in the case of a memorial or they just want to, here's a chunk of money, we want it to be applied towards this, or let's use the interest and, you know, pay that out in scholarships. There's a lot of that goes on there. The school district itself really doesn't have the funding mechanisms in place because they're a public entity to be able to do those kinds of things. And so that's why school districts have foundations, and that's one of the purposes of the foundation, to be able to allow for folks to donate or invest money through scholarships through that kind of mechanism. The other thing with scholarships, you know, people think, well, I don't really know what I want. Our scholarships can be anything. right? I mean, they can truly be anything. They can be, you know, $500 to an individual who, you know, took a lot of interest in music or in the science world or tech ed or athletics or whatever it might be. It could be a larger amount that has to do with people extending their career at a tech school or a four-year school or going into the Army or things like that. We even have a scholarship. It's a $5,000 a year, which is, you know, a substantial amount of money that's given to a student for just being nice, right? And our teachers kind of vote on who is the recipient of this based on their character, right? There's no other, GPA isn't calculated in, attendance isn't calculated in, it's just being a good person, right? So I guess my point is that there are so many different mechanisms that people can create scholarships for. And so if people are considering something like that or just think that that would be an opportunity, like, hey, my father who passed away was really, really into X, Y, and Z, create a scholarship that really kind of celebrates the successes of your father and can be carried on through helping a youth individual out as well. So I just wanted to add those couple of things on the foundation. Again, just a wonderful organization to be a part of.
Let's talk about your school board. Any changes this year?
Yeah, so we had elections, the statewide elections, of course, were on April 1st. And we had two seats open, our city seat and then an Area 2 West, which is west of town. We had two candidates running. Both were running unopposed, one for each of the two seats. Aaron Onbehan is our current board president, and he's an incumbent that is rerunning. And so he represents the area to the west of Richland Center, outside of the city limits. There's several different townships that represents. He ran unopposed and, of course, then was successful in his rerunning. So he will be reelected to a three-year term. And then Neil Huntemer, who's been a board member now for a few years, and has done a wonderful job on the board. He lives in the city, and he elected in December to not rerun. Okay, and so his seat was open. Brian Miller put his name in, and he was also running unopposed. So Brian, of course, won as well. And so Brian will be joining our board. And so the two of them, Aaron and Brian, will take their official oath of office at our reorganizational meeting on April 28th. Our current board will have our board meeting on Monday, the 14th. They'll have another regularly scheduled board meeting on the 21st. That's a little different than normal. Usually they're the second and fourth month, but in April it's the second and third because of the reorg on the last Monday of the month. And then, as I mentioned, that special buildings and property committee where they'll be revealing those bids on the 23rd. And that'll really be the end of this current board. And then on April 28th, Aaron and Brian will join the other five board members and take their oath of office. And at that meeting, a president will be elected and all of our officing positions are being elected. And then moving forward from there, whoever is elected president after the 28th, they will assign the rest of the board members to one of the four different committees, okay? And a board member could be on one or two different committees, but trying to take advantage of their strengths and their interests and what they really want to be a part of, whether they should be on Buildings, Property, and Transportation Committee, Curriculum Assessment, Public Relations Committee, our Policy Committee, or our Personnel Negotiations and Budget Development Committee. So board members will be placed on one or two of those committees, and then May is kind of our school board start of our school board year, right? That's when our new board is really full-fledged. That's when our committees start kind of over with their yearly cycle. So it doesn't quite align with the fiscal year. It's a little, couple months in advance, but it's really been a pretty good process, and we're excited to have Aaron back, and we're excited to have Brian Miller part of our board, and we certainly wish Neil the best of luck and thank him for his years of service. He's been a wonderful addition and been a driving force to a lot of the positive change that we've had in our school district over the last few years.
Recently, the board looked at your alternative education opportunities coming up. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the last time we were here, I'd pitched some of the ideas that we had at our March 28th meeting. The board approved those five proposals that we had regarding alternative education. And I've been on here before since we started Partner, and I'm a big advocate of finding different ways to educate students. Not all students learn in the brick and mortar traditional model, right? They just have to have other ways to learn. And so we started Partner a few years ago. That's been a great success. One of the changes that'll happen there is we'll be expanding that. Third year in a row, we're expanding it from 25 students up to 40 students. That it's a 15 student increase. We've got about 17 kids on a waiting list right now. So most of them will have the opportunity. And then again, the plan is to continue to grow that, although they're starting to get to a point where they're outgrowing the space that they have. And that's a great thing, right? That they're developing those community relationships. We've got what's called our RC school. This is our school within a school. It's kind of a confined small school environment for students who can't have as much stimuli with all of the different bells and transitions and going from this class to this class or this teacher to this teacher. We try to keep in each of our three buildings. It looks a little different at each building, but try to reduce the stimuli that those students have by keeping them in one building, a little bit more of a one-room schoolhouse approach, a smaller environment, one teacher. You don't have to necessarily go to different classes. That has been wildly successful at each of the three buildings. I continue to just get teachers and staff and people in the buildings that just say that has been just a game changer. It's such a small change, but really has allowed for all of the students to grow and prosper in the school. Our off-campus alt ed was increased from a three-quarter FTE to a full-time FTE, whether that's with one person or divided up over multiple. Those are people who educate students that can't necessarily make it to our on-campus facilities. So they meet somewhere else. Sometimes it's homebound or at the public library, those kinds of situations. So a little bit of increase there. And then the two big ones are the ROA, which has been in existence for a long time. We're kind of calling this ROA V2, right? Version 2, called the Hive for it's home-based. There's an instructor, in-person instructor assigned to you is the I in Hive. Virtual component is the V in Hive and education. So Hive for that. And what we're really trying to do is model what NACUSA has done and has been very successful with, and to take our current ROA model that is one curriculum platform for students in grades 6 through 12, expand that to K through 12 or 1 through 12, and give them a variety of different platforms. Some students want to learn at home, but they need to have textbooks. Parents want to be able to facilitate that education. Others want virtual models, but there's three or four different kinds of virtual models out there, and probably more than that, truthfully. And they may need different forms of instruction or different types of instruction. And so this in-person instructor that we're going to hire, one in-person instructor, they're going to be able to facilitate the education for 60, 70, 80 kids. And we're really trying to target our homeschool population. Right now, students who are being homeschooled by their parents, their parents are very involved in their education. But those parents and families are having to invest the money into curriculum. By being a part of the Richland School District, we could purchase that curriculum for them as long as it's not a faith-based component. We're still a public school. And they can still facilitate the education, but they would have access to an in-person licensed teacher, and we would be able to help them get the curriculum that they need. And they wouldn't be just limited to the few sources that they have. We would be able to expand that to all of our sources. And then, so we're really excited about that. We're also trying to target that to some of those students that we are losing to open enrollment out to other virtual options, because we purchase our curriculum traditionally through Wisconsin Virtual Systems, which is a McFarland-based virtual school. But we have a lot of students that go to the Medford Virtual School or the Academy of Excellence Virtual School or at the Appleton Virtual School. Well, now we can purchase those individual things for each individual student to be like, this really works well for them, or this really works well for them, or maybe this one works well for them for math, but this one works well for them for reading. They're not confined to just having one mode of learning. So very excited about that. That's going to be something that we think is going to be budget neutral or budget positive in year one right off the bat. And we're looking for to hire a teacher for that right now. That's being posted. And then the last one is this behavioral academy that we're kind of calling iThrive. And that is going to be a lower level, pre-K through grade 3 or 4, where we're really focusing on getting students the behavioral supports that they need, the therapy supports that they may need, and the academic supports. There are institutions around the state that do one or maybe two of those, but we don't really know of any that does all three of them, right? There are therapy components that aren't educational components, and therefore schools can't spend the money to help students go to therapy, right? That has to come from someplace else. there are educational facilities that we send students to that we don't have the supports in-house, but they don't have the therapy component. Well, the reality is if we don't do both, if we don't help our students and our families that are struggling, whether it's because of a disability or trauma or whatever it might be, that small percentage of people, if we don't help them in all different aspects, right, making sure that they get the counseling component that they need, the therapy, the behavioral analytics, and the academics, if we don't do all of that, we're kind of failing those students. And so this is a very innovative, something that we don't know of any other places around that have it. I've already been contacted by numerous other area schools that are like, we were really interested in sending, you know, a kid there that we have. And most school districts don't have 8 or 9 of these students. They may have 1, right? And so, but this is a need for our area. There are facilities around that do the educational component. Some of them are a 2-year waiting list. And so it's just hard for students to get into these places, and it's hard for the school districts to meet the needs of the students because they just don't have the means. This would be an opportunity for us to do that. So we're exploring where that might be. We're exploring how that looks, but we are hiring a board certified behavioral analyst right now. We're looking to hire an alt ed teacher. We're looking to hire some behavioral techs, which are specially trained aides for these students. And we're ready to hit the ground running as soon as we can find a location for that in the near future, and ready to do that next year. Again, wanting to start small, right? Because anytime you take something new, there's going to be some hiccups. There's going to be some things that we need to tweak. And it's much easier to do that on a small scale. I think we learned that with Partner, right? By limiting that to 12 or 13 students in year one, it really allowed us to build that the right way. And now that has a super strong foundation and is now ready to grow at a much faster rate. I think we need to do the same thing with this. We're probably limited to 3 or 4 students in year one and then expand it to 12 to 15 in year two, and that's probably where we would be. So we're excited about that. We think we're being very innovative, and we think we've got a lot of good strategies in place to help all students learn and thrive in the academic world as well as the social world.
With other districts, if they were to bring a student into that that situation, then obviously would that help offset some of the costs then?
That's right. Yes, there's two kind of financial components to it. Obviously, if there are students and we're paying another school, another facility, not necessarily another school district, but another facility, New Frontier in Prairie or Chulita in La Crosse, Scan and Rock Springs, any of those places, we're paying tuition to those places, okay, as a school district. So if we have something, first of all, we would no longer have that expense. If other school districts are looking to come here, then they would maintain the district status of their residents, and that school district would then pay us tuition for educational services. It's actually an intergovernmental agency agreement is what it is, but for simple terms, it's tuition that they would be paying the Richland School District, and that would be a financial component as well. And the third component is Medicaid reimbursement. There's a when we started really exploring the opportunities for Medicaid, the Medicaid reimbursement will likely cover all, if not a little more than, the cost of these one-to-one behavioral texts. If that component can be paid by Medicaid and the other can be offset by either not having an expense or by generating some revenue, again, we believe that maybe not in year one budget neutral, but budget two budget neutral or budget surplus.
Always good stuff, Steve. Thanks for coming by.
You bet. Thank you.
You bet. Steve Board, superintendent of the Richland School District. Chris Shannon, president of the School District Foundation, was here earlier as well in our morning show studios.